Hey, fellow Okies and all true crime enthusiasts out there. Welcome back, y'all, to Season 2 of Sooner State True Crime. I'm Cece, your host, writer, and producer of the show. I just wanted to apologize to all my loyal listeners out there for having to take this impromptu break the past month. If you didn't happen to listen to my kind of ranting and raving announcement, I had to move all of a sudden. And I just literally lost any extra time I had available to create new episodes for the past few weeks due to this nightmare of a move. However, I finally have some sort of Wi-Fi at the new place, and despite living really close to the train tracks, I at least am now in a place where I have the ability to research, write, and record. So thanks y'all for bearing with me, and welcome to Season 2 of Sooner State True Crime. To show my appreciation for y'all, I'm going to start this second season off with a two-part special, Unsolved, the murders of Brittany Phillips and the murders of Julie Mason and Keegan Bruce. In this episode, part one, I will cover the unsolved 2004 murder of Brittany Phillips. Then next week, I'll release part two, the 2016 unsolved murders of Julie Mason and her son Keegan Bruce. These tragedies remain unsolved and unresolved for these families. I wanted to cover each to highlight the need to solve these cold cases, and as always, in the hopes I can possibly reach the right person who can help solve these senseless crimes. After the two-part special, we will continue releasing new episodes every 1st and 15th of the month, until our next, but scheduled break sometime early next year. This season, we will cover some older crimes from the state of Oklahoma, as well as some more recent and shocking ones. Be sure y'all are subscribed in Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts, so you never miss a new upcoming episode. This season, we will discuss the case against pharmacist Jerome Erslin, the Osage murders, and the Oklahoma State homecoming crash. As always, I'd love to hear from y'all about what crimes you'd like to hear, as well as your comments about the show. So please email me at soonerstatecrimepod@gmail.com. Follow our social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at OK Crime State, and check out our website for the sources and everything SSTC at crimestate.weebly.com. Please help support the show by donating to the tip jar at paypal.me/crimestate. We really need your support more than ever, so please donate any amount. You'll receive special goodies and a handwritten thank you card. If you can't support us monetarily, please leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. We appreciate any support from y'all, and thank you again. Now let's get into our case for this part one, episode one of season two kickoff, Unsolved, the murder of Brittany Phillips. Over the summer of 2004, Brittany Phillips moved back home to Tulsa, Oklahoma, after her freshman year of college in Florida. The 18-year-old enrolled at Tulsa Community College, was hired by Applebee's, and rented her own apartment close to her high school in Tulsa. Tragically, Brittany would be murdered before her new life back home even began. So come away with me to Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the summer of 2004, where the following crime occurred. Brittany Ivana Sarah Phillips was born on October 4, 1985, in St. Petersburg, Florida. Brittany, as her mom would call her, was the second-born child, joining her 15-month older brother, Josh. Brittany's mother, Dr. Maggie Zingman, and her father, John Phillips, were married when the kids were born, but divorced when the children were young, and he was not an active part of their lives past their childhoods. Both Brittany and Josh were primarily raised by their mother, Maggie. The family briefly moved from Florida to Kentucky for a short time before, in 1991, the family moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, for a permanent fresh start. Brittany and her brother Josh were close, but definitely were competitive. Josh was only 15 months older than Brittany, so they were always very close in school growing up. Brittany showed an interest in acting and modeling as a child, despite being abnormally short for her age. Brittany was beautiful and was instinctively a natural in front of the camera. Quote, "She had this angelic round face surrounded by long, cascading blonde curls," Maggie remembered. In 1993, an 8-year-old girl with large brown eyes and wild curly blonde hair ran onto the stage of a war-era play, where, wrapped in an American flag, young Brittany wept dramatically and collapsed into her mother's arms. However, she usually would dance and act alongside her mother at local theaters as a child. Brittany was also described as being very intelligent, beautiful, funny, and kind. She was also an active gymnast from a young age, up until high school. As she grew older, Brittany also enjoyed running, swimming, and started to experiment with shot put. Quote, "She was athletic, creative, and intelligent," Maggie said. Brittany's intelligence and good grades earned her accolades throughout high school at Union High in Tulsa. Despite the fact Brittany was incredibly smart and beautiful, she wasn't one of the most popular kids in high school. According to classmates, Brittany didn't really have a lot of very close friends, but she was nice to everybody. Brittany graduated from Union High School in May of 2003, when she was only 17. Brittany had started kindergarten a year early for being so bright. Her good grades earned Brittany a full-ride scholarship to Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida, which was her mother's alma mater. Despite these accomplishments, according to Maggie, Brittany didn't consider herself all that smart. She would always credit her study skills and always try to convince others they were smarter than her. Despite being younger than her peers, Phillips had a direction in life. After her grandmother's own fight with cancer her senior year of high school, Brittany decided she wanted to pursue chemistry. She hoped to eventually help research a cure for cancer. Quote, "She was so smart, just so extremely intelligent," Maggie said. Quote, "She wanted to get into cancer research. Her grandmother had recently died, and I think that really affected her, but inspired her to find a cure. She had a passion to help others." In August of 2003, Brittany set off to St. Petersburg, Florida, to start school at Eckerd College and major in chemistry with her full-ride scholarship. Brittany did well academically her freshman year. However, while attending the school, Brittany started to become very homesick. In May of 2004, near the end of her freshman year in Florida, Phillips packed up her things and moved back to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Her mother had moved to a nearby town, but Brittany's brother and other family and friends were still living in Tulsa. As the summer of 2004 ended, Brittany was 18 years old and had a year of college behind her. She had decided to enroll at Tulsa Community College with the goal to earn an associate's degree before making any more big life decisions. She did, however, still plan to enter the medical field and eventually cancer research. Phillips's mother, Maggie Zeman, is a psychologist and lived in Chandler, Oklahoma, which is about an hour away from Tulsa. Brittany would often visit her mother on the weekends. Brittany had several friends that also attended TCC. Her mother, Maggie, said she still had a lot of friends from high school living in Tulsa as well. Phillips was living in the quiet Glen Eagles Apartments, located at 9407 East 65th Street, in a quiet part of Tulsa. She was living on the second floor, and the area was not known for high crime. It was right next to Brittany's high school, Union High. She also had been working at the local Applebee's restaurant part-time, leading up to the start of school. Brittany was enrolled in 16 credit hours for the fall semester, studying chemistry at Tulsa Community College. She had a lot of female friends already, and enthusiastically hosted study groups for the girls. With her beautiful looks, long curly blonde hair, petite 5'2 tall figure, and adorable dimpled smile, Brittany never lacked the attention of the opposite sex. She did, however, struggle to let people down, due to her kind nature. This led Brittany into an abusive relationship with a controlling young man. One man that pursued Brittany was a security guard that, despite her saying she didn't want to see him, continued to contact her. Thankfully, after Brittany blocked the man's number, the relationship finally ended. In the time leading up to her murder, Brittany had started to date a nice young man that her mother approved of. Brittany had even brought him home to meet her mother. Brittany was a kind and studious girl who stayed out of trouble, her mother recalled. Brittany had no issues with drugs or problems with relationships or any enemies at all. She was smart, beautiful, funny, and intelligent with a kind soul. She was the everyday, all-American girl next door. So the brutal, shocking crime she was the victim of led the parents of Tulsa College students to become very concerned. On September 27, 2004, Brittany Phillips attended classes at Tulsa Community College. And just like almost every other day, she spoke to her mother, Maggie. Brittany suffered from seasonal allergies and wasn't feeling well. She complained to her mom during their phone call about not getting a doctor's appointment. Maggie said she would schedule Britt a doctor's appointment in Chandler, where Maggie lived, for the upcoming weekend. Quote, "We were very close. We talked all the time," Maggie told Dateline. Quote, "That day, that Monday, I talked to Brittany like I normally did, and I just told her I'd call her later in the week." The close-knit mother and daughter said their usual goodbyes of "I love you." And that's the last time Maggie Zingman spoke to her daughter, Brittany Phillips. Quote, "Brittany had left Tulsa Community College with a friend. They were going to college," said Tulsa Police Detective Eddie Majors. Quote, "Brittany dropped the friend off at her apartment complex at 51st and Memorial. Brittany drives home. That is when she spoke to her mother about 10 p.m. On the following day, September 28th, Brittany failed to show up for any of her classes at TCC. Her friends were somewhat concerned because Brittany was an excellent and dependable student. They assumed she was still under the weather. Quote, "I called her the next day and couldn't get a hold of her," Maggie said. Quote, "But I knew she had school and was probably busy." During this call Maggie made to Brittany, she left a voicemail asking for a call back. The next day, September 29th, Brittany was again a no-show at school for the second day in a row. Her friends were growing more concerned, especially since no one had been able to contact her. Brittany's mother calls again, but got no answer. There had been a few times where Maggie didn't speak to her daughter for a few days, so she justified it in her head that way. Brittany did not attend class again on September 30th. Maggie called her daughter again on the Thursday and left a typical mom message. Quote, "I called and said, Brittany, I know you're okay, but just call me back because I just want to hear it from you." When she failed to show up on the 30th, several of her friends took action. One of Brittany's classmates' father was an attorney and had law experience as well. She called and explained the situation to him as she approached Brittany's apartment. The friend knocked on the front door, but there was no answer. After several knocks at the door, she tried the knob herself, and much to her surprise, the door was unlocked. As she opened the door a crack, her father told her to stop, shut the door, and he would call police and have them come conduct a welfare check on Brittany Phillips. Quote, "After a few days, the friend goes over to Brittany's apartment, and getting no answer, they go and check the well-being and find Brittany deceased inside her apartment," said Detective Majors of the Tulsa PD. Police were called about 10:15 p.m. on Thursday, September 30th, 2004. Once they arrived, police secured the scene and found the body of 18-year-old Brittany Phillips, lifeless and on the floor of her bedroom. Her body was facing away from the head of the bed. It was immediately obvious that this was a homicide. Her body had been there for several days.
She was probably murdered on either the night of the 27th or the 28th. Phillips was Tulsa's 38th homicide of the year, 2004. There were visible thumb marks on Brittany's neck, which indicated she had been strangled. She was only wearing a sleeveless shirt and underwear. It appeared to investigators that she may have been redressed and that a sexual assault had occurred. Police believed that, luckily, Brittany was unconscious when she was raped. First responders were able to identify the victim as Brittany by her driver's license photo. Tulsa Detective Jeff Felton was assigned the case and was devoted to solving the rape and murder from day one. Luckily, the killer left quite a bit of evidence at the scene. A used towel was found on the ground, close to Brittany's body. It had been used to clean up by the killer. A light purple pillowcase was also found at the scene that did not match any other linen in the apartment. A urine stain was found on the bedsheet and a small speck of blood on the wall in the bedroom. In addition, all of the window screens in the bedroom and living room, four in total, had been removed. They were also collected and dusted for fingerprints. Marks on the walls also showed that Brittany put up a hell of a fight for her life, and blood was found underneath her fingernails. The building had four apartments on bottom and four on top. Brittany's unit was on the end, only sharing one wall on the second floor. It was close to 9 p.m. on the 30th of September when Tulsa police arrived at her apartment to complete their welfare check on the teenager. When officers approached the apartment's front door, they found the apartment was unlocked. Once inside, officers located the body of 18-year-old Brittany Phillips. There had been obvious signs of a struggle, and her head was opposite the pillows laying on the floor next to her bed. Based on evidence from the scene and Brittany's body, she tried to fight off her attacker. Evidence showed she had been thrown up against the wall at some point during the struggle. The apartment appeared to have been ransacked, despite nothing of value being missing. There was also evidence Phillips was sexually assaulted prior to being strangled to death. Thank God, investigators believe that she may have been unconscious when the rape occurred. Her cause of death was determined to be strangulation or suffocation. It is unclear if the killer used anything besides their strength to subdue the teenage girl, but thumb marks were visible around her neck. The time of death is estimated to be between 9 p.m. on September 27, 2004, and 8 p.m. on the 28th, which caused her body to undergo decomposition since it wasn't found for three more days. Nothing was missing from the apartment, ruling out robbery as a possible motive. The morning of October 1, 2004, Maggie Zingman would receive the worst news any mother could possibly hear. It was raining when she received a knock on her door. A soaking wet deputy, holding a piece of paper, asked, quote, "Are you Maggie Zingman?" In her own words, Maggie described that fateful day, saying, quote, "I opened the door to this young deputy standing in the rain, and he had a piece of paper in his hand. He said, 'Are you Maggie Zingman?' I said, 'Yes.' He replied, 'You need to call the Tulsa Police Department. Your daughter has been murdered.'" Dr. Zingman immediately headed for her daughter's Tulsa apartment. When she arrived, Brittany's body had already been taken away by the medical examiner's office. Quote, "They wouldn't let me see your body. They said it would be too shocking," Maggie said. Quote, "But I was already in shock. I just wanted to see my baby." Maggie eventually was allowed to say goodbye to her daughter through a thin blanket that covered her face by the funeral director. Quote, "I just stroked her little nose with my finger and said, 'I'm sorry this happened, Brittany. I'm sorry I didn't protect you. I'm sorry that they won't let me touch you. I'm just so sorry.'" Once investigators started to process the crime scene, they discovered several points of entry into the apartment. This also means the killer also had several points of exit as well. How the killer entered the apartment was a major question of investigators. Brittany's autopsy later confirmed she had been raped and her cause of death was asphyxiation. She put up a fight, and there was definitely a struggle between Brittany and her attacker. Investigators believe the attacker had possibly gained entry into the apartment and laid in wait for Phillips, who was later attacked while she was asleep in bed. During a canvass of the surrounding area, police were unable to turn up any leads. No one in the apartment complex had seen or heard anything suspicious. They were, fortunately, able to collect DNA from Brittany's sheets. October 1, 2004, is a date grieving mother Maggie Zingman will never forget. Quote, "I mean, it was almost out of a movie," she said. Quote, "It's so bizarre, but it was pouring down rain. Rain was coming in my door. I just remember almost like the room caving in on me," Zingman said. Maggie recalled the deputy that broke the news and just walking away. Quote, "For the first half hour, I didn't know what to do," Maggie recalled. Quote, "I was in total shock. It had to be the wrong person. As a parent, you always think, this could never happen to me." Police asked the public for help solving this horrific crime from the start. Quote, "We would like to talk to anybody who has any knowledge of this girl or anybody who had been in or around her apartment this week," Detective Brian Huff said. Tragically, Brittany was buried on what would have been her 19th birthday, October 4th, 2004.
Tulsa police were at a disadvantage as they began the investigation into the rape and murder of Brittany Phillips. They had no immediate suspects and very few leads. They asked the public with any knowledge of Brittany or the area of her apartment to come forward. The first part of the investigation was trying to find out how the killer gained access to Brittany's apartment. All the doors and windows were locked. However, all the screens from the living room and bedroom windows, four in all, had been taken down. Each screen was dusted for fingerprints, but they were all inconclusive. As they searched the apartment, police found a small door in her closet, which led to an attic space. This attic was accessible by the other seven apartments in her building. The forensics team collected over 70 swabs of potential DNA from the crime scene. They also collected a semen sample from the bed and urine from the bed sheet. The semen found matched the DNA of a separate blood stain found on the wall in the bedroom. Police also found a small towel on the floor near Brittany's body. It appeared to have been used to clean up by the killer. The marks on the wall were proof Brittany had fought with her attacker. Regardless of those signs of a struggle, the apartment seemed to be in order. Nothing was stolen and there was no signs of forced entry. It was speculated by some investigators that the killer may have removed the window screens in order to make it seem like a break-in occurred. They also believe the killer exited the apartment through the front door, which is why it was found unlocked. Although they collected a large amount of DNA evidence, there was no match in the CODIS system. Investigators would take some unique actions to try and identify the suspect. Dedicated investigators pushed themselves to the limit by chasing down leads and DNA tested suspect after suspect. All of Brittany's friends and classmates were interviewed and cooperated with the investigation. Police especially were interested in speaking to an ex-boyfriend of Brittany's that had difficulty accepting rejection. After the bad relationship, Maggie was happy to see her daughter involved with a nice young man, who she'd even brought home to meet Maggie. A light purple pillowcase was also found at Brittany's apartment that did not belong to her. Investigators initially kept the discovery from the public, but on the third anniversary of the murder, they made an announcement. Quote, "A pillowcase that was found in the crime scene did not match any of her linens," Detective Jeff Felton said. Quote, "We believe that the perpetrator may have brought the pillowcase with him and left it behind." A month after the murder, police had a DNA profile from the samples found at the crime scene. It was tested against thousands of local suspects, in addition to the approximately million suspects in the CODIS system, which is the national DNA database. Police stated, quote, every male friend she had, ex-boyfriends, people in Florida, males in the area, janitors at the high school, anyone she knew or knew of her friends, everyone was tested. There was never a match. However, despite all the hard work, Brittany's case turned cold and stayed that way for years. In the 10th year of the investigation, police received another promising tip. They were optimistic that this could finally get answers for Brittany's family. Quote, hopefully we can find out if this is the guy or not, said Detective Eddie Majors of Tulsa Police. For obvious reasons, police had to keep details of these latest tips from the public. One reason being they hoped it would encourage more people to come forward with information they may have. Nearing the 10th anniversary of Brittany's murder, the Tulsa police had tested numerous DNA samples of possible suspects against the DNA found at the crime scene. In the summer of 2014, police announced a new person of interest in the case. Quote, we've started checking into the background of this person, and that has led us to determine if he's in CODIS and where he's located. The issue now is trying to find him, Detective Majors said. Police wouldn't say much about this person, except that he had no relationship with Phillips, and an outside source tipped investigators off. Eventually, this person of interest's DNA was not a match to the sample from the scene, and he was eliminated. In 2017, a Tulsa cold case detective submitted DNA samples to a Virginia-based company that used the samples to create a composite sketch of the suspected killer. Tulsa Police Sergeant Dave Walker said Phillips' case was a priority for years, so when they found out about Parabon Nano Labs technology, they decided to give it a try. Quote, it's quite expensive, so you know it's one of those things that you can't do in every case, Walker said. But they felt that Brittany was worth it. Finally, in 2018, Maggie Zeman got the call she'd been waiting for, or so she thought. Throughout the investigation, police had used evidence from the scene to create a forensic composite sketch of what the suspect may look like.
In January of 2018, Parabon was able to use the DNA found at the crime scene to create a composite sketch of the suspect. The company was able to determine the suspect was most likely a white male with a fair complexion, darker blonde or brown hair, with blue or green eyes. His age was unknown, but the composite sketch was of an attractive 25-year-old male. The picture caused a lot of tips to come into police. Quote, it almost broke my heart, because it meant that there is a good possibility that, you know, she trusted this person at some point before he did this, Brittany's mother stated. Quote, we know his hair color, his eye color, his skin complexion, where he is originally from as far as his family, said Tulsa Police Detective Eddie Majors. The news gave Maggie a short-lived hope. The investigators created a drawing of what the DNA donor most likely looks. Quote, blonde hair, blue eyes. That would have been somebody Brittany, look-wise, would have been attracted to, you know, Zingman said. Using additional information, they determined that the DNA found at the scene of Brittany's murder was, in fact, not that of her killer. The suspect had an alibi for the time of the murder and denied any involvement. The DNA donor was the boyfriend of one of Brittany's girlfriends, who stayed over at the apartment with his girlfriend. Quote, with the DNA evidence, investigators were able to obtain a forensic composite drawing of what the suspect would have looked like, Tulsa police said in a statement. Quote, with that information and further investigation, we were able to identify a subject. Through further investigation, it was determined that the subject was not involved in the death of Brittany Phillips. Based on this new development, the forensic composite drawing does not portray what the suspect looks like. For years, Maggie was convinced that identifying the DNA donor would lead to her daughter's killer, but tragically for her, that would not be the case. Quote, "We identified him through an investigation and interviewed him," Major said. Quote, "Through information we received from him and corroboration we got for his story, we are no longer looking at the suspect based on the forensic composite drawing that we released." After Maggie heard the news, she said receiving the news was, quote, "as bad as being told Brittany had been murdered." Quote, "This means the DNA profile that we have used for 15 years, developed from blood and semen at the crime scene, the blood and semen was not our killer," Zingman said in an email to Tulsa World. Quote, "It was found at her apartment because Brittany let this young man and her girlfriend sleep over." The setback of the DNA hurt Maggie almost as much as the murder itself. Sergeant Walken stated, quote, "This is just another piece of the puzzle. We're still investigating and will continue to follow leads and tips as we get them." She said police had not informed her about the alibi they believe clears a young man whose girlfriend was Brittany's friend. The development, in Zingman's eyes, meant Tulsa police should consider it like a new case because, quote, "everything has to be re-looked at." Tips about Brittany's case still continued to trickle in to investigators, and they said nothing is too small. Almost 9 years after the murder, police completed a DNA test of a Texas man linked to their investigation. Quote, "A person had contacted us and said this particular individual may be involved in the Brittany Phillips homicide. And at this point, we're trying to locate that individual to see if his DNA is in CODIS. And that's what we're waiting on," said Detective Majors. In addition, investigators were also looking at other possible suspects by looking at, quote, "any similar assaults or any known criminals who are known to be in that area, as well as other information that has come in from friends," Detective Huff said. The city of Tulsa has one dedicated detective, Eddie Majors, assigned to work all the city's unsolved cold cases. Majors tirelessly works every lead and remains hopeful that one day he'll deliver justice for Brittany. Quote, "It's going to take the community to solve these," Majors said. He added that no tip is too small, because every tip is vital to solving each case. Quote, "It may be a very minor thing, but it may play a major role," Majors said. Majors felt for Brittany's family as well, stating, quote, "As an investigator, we can't work for the victims. We work for the family members. I've maintained contact with Maggie over the years, and you know she's on a mission, and we are as well. We are not going to give up." The realization that the DNA collected at Brittany's murder scene was a difficult setback for her family and investigators. Sergeant Walken stated, quote, "This is just another piece of the puzzle. We're still investigating and will continue to follow leads and tips as we get them." Crimes committed most likely by a stranger to the victim are the most difficult to solve. Criminal profiles have made an analysis of the type of person who is responsible for this rape and murder. This monster is most likely a man that is awake and alone at night. He most likely experiences sexual problems, but will hostily deny any issues to others. This man will engage in high-risk and pain-inflicting behavior. He also may inflict pain on his partner during sex. This person will be angry most of the time and believe others are against him and may explode suddenly. This individual may have been arrested for rape before, but if not, for a charge such as endangering or outrageous public indecency instead. If the murderer is remorseful, they may have gone from outgoing to isolation, eaten up with guilt. This person may have a public service job, one in which they can access people's addresses. The department is also exploring other avenues. Quote, "We are looking at similar assaults or any known criminals who are known to be in that area, as well as other information that has come in from friends, Officer Huff said. To this day, the murder of Brittany Phillips remains unsolved. So please, if you or someone you know may have any information about the murder that occurred on September 27th or 28th in 2004 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, please call Tulsa PD. See the show notes for numbers and links.
In 2007, grieving mother of murder victim Brittany Phillips, Dr. Maggie Zingman, set out on a crusade in her To Catch a Killer van across the country. Maggie's RAV4 was covered in pictures of Brittany and details of the case and the suspect, as a way to get her daughter's story out there. Maggie knew that in order for her daughter's case to get solved, it needed as much exposure as possible. Zingman is also advocating for DNA samples to be collected at the time of arrest. She believes if this was mandatory, her daughter's killer could have been caught already. Zingman lives below her means and drives all over the U.S., handing out flyers and attempting to draw national attention to Brittany's case. She prays that the van will be seen by that crucial person who has information that'll lead to an arrest. The first excursion in the caravan took the grieving mother to St. Louis, Indianapolis, Ohio, and New York City. Maggie even dipped her toes into the world of politics, where she lobbied lawmakers, with success, for violent criminals' DNA to be taken at the time of their arrest, not after a conviction. Quote, "We're asking for DNA samples to be taken from individuals upon request," Maggie stated. As of 2019, 30 states and the federal government have such laws, according to the National Conferences of State Legislatures. But Maggie hopes all states will eventually pass the law. As of 2019, Maggie has drove over 239,000 miles, gone through 3 vehicles, and visited 48 states in her Catch a Killer van. And to speak about her daughter's unsolved case, other cases, and the DNA collection importance. Tips would pour in after each city she drove through. And, quote, "One woman walked up to me at a truck stop and handed me $200, Maggie recalled. Quote, "I've been prayed over in about 50 different religions." If DNA samples were taken at the time of arrest for violent crimes in all 50 states, rather than after conviction, it could prevent a significant number of violent crimes from happening, since offenders would know their DNA is on file and think twice before committing another crime. Knowing the risk of being caught is almost certain, given the technology available today. Zingman remains hopeful to this day that eventually her daughter's killer will be caught and justice served. She just is beginning to fear she won't be alive to see that day. Quote, "Part of me has to accept that we may never find him," Maggie admits. She also runs a website dedicated to finding Brittany's killer. She said sometimes her efforts are economically, physically, and emotionally draining, but she is doing this for Brittany and others. Quote, "Finding him, even if we can convict him, it's not going to bring her back," Maggie said. Quote, "All I can do is, in her name, try to save other people." On the 15th anniversary of the murder, Maggie is still setting out on excursions in her Catch a Killer caravan, and still is tirelessly searching for her daughter's killer. In 2008, a local filmmaker named Tommy Wallace had a chance meeting with Maggie Zingman, which led him to volunteer to make the film for free. He also hopes to help solve Brittany's murder. His 9-minute film is called, quote, "Who Murdered Brittany Phillips?" Filmmaker Wallace met Maggie when she was making flyers about the murder. Wallace wanted to help and had a personal experience with the murder in his family as well. The short film discusses 3 possible scenarios about what might have happened to Brittany. The first is that Brittany answered the door to someone who pushed themselves inside. The second is that someone followed her inside as she entered her apartment. And the third, it was someone she met through work or school. Wallace used local actors and had two goals in posting the film online. Quote, it'll help keep Brittany's memory alive and the hunt for who did it, Wallace explained. Maggie also founded the foundation named Brittany's Bridge, a clearinghouse for cold and unsolved murders. The organization provides an information-sharing network for families with an unsolved murder victim and police departments nationwide. It's meant to be a bridge between families with unsolved homicides and police departments across the U.S. Zingman realized she was able to get her daughter's story out there with her caravan. However, other families do not have that exposure. She heard the family's frustrations with a lack of news coverage locally and nationally about their unsolved cases, and she wanted to help. If you're a family or friend of an unsolved murder victim, email therapoet@aol.com to get in contact with Brittany's Bridge. Thanks y'all so much for listening to Season 2, Episode 1, Part 1 of Unsolved, The Murder of Brittany Phillips. If you or anyone you know may have any information, no matter how small, regarding the approximately September 28, 2004, murder of 18-year-old Brittany Phillips in Tulsa, Oklahoma, please call Tulsa Police at 918-596-9135. Let's help bring closure and justice to Brittany's mother and family. Please contact police if you know anything. In a week, Unsolved Part 2, The Murders of Julie Mason and Keegan Bruce will be released. Please be sure y'all are subscribed so you never miss a new upcoming episode. And please, guys, leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It really helps. But we also really need your support to pay the podcast bills. So donate to the tip jar at paypal.me/crimestate. Also, join our social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at OKCrimeState. And as always, I'd love to hear your comments about the show or any case suggestions, or just say hi. So email me at soonerstatecrimepod@gmail.com. The sources for this and every episode are listed on our website, crimestate.weebly.com. I'd also like to thank Swanson Health for sponsoring this episode, and remind y'all to receive 20% off their excellent health and beauty products. Visit swansonhealth.com and use code TRUE20 for 20% off. And I'll be back with y'all in 1 week with Unsolved Part 2, The Murder of Julie Mason and Keegan Bruce. Check the show notes for links to everything. And as always, please stay sooner safe out there, y'all.